Hello, I'm Ben.
And I'm Jenny.
And we're Playing Doctor. Playing Doctor is our weekly podcast where we watch an episode of Doctor Who each week and discuss the show.
Yeah. Well said.
Yeah, well said. This is 3 weeks and I still haven't got the intro down. But we'll do a little something different this week. Like we said in the last two episodes, we're going to have a guest.
Yes, this is our first guest. This is my friend Tom Valor from the great state of Wisconsin.
Well, he's not just your friend. He's my friend, too.
He's my friend first.
Okay, fine. Tommy, how are you doing tonight?
Not too bad. I actually met both of you in person the first time, the same time, so.
Well, okay, that's true.
Yeah.
That is true.
But I've known Jenny for longer.
Yes. You were kind of involved with the birth of this podcast. Last year when Jenny had started setting up Skype chats while we watched episodes.
Yes.
Yeah. And we were kind of all just screwing around one night. I don't remember which episode we were watching, but we kind of said, we should do this as a podcast. You know, hey, that's a great idea. And then finally, a year and a half later, we're putting it in motion. We have a podcast now.
Podcasts are cool.
Yeah, podcasts are cool.
Yes. Good things take time to develop.
Yeah.
Well, it was like, you know, a long gestation period, but it's finally, you know, coming around.
Well, they never actually say how long the gestation period for, like, a Time Lord is, so maybe we're jumping the gun.
Yeah, this could be early. That's right.
Premature.
Now,
did we figure out the rating for your show yet?
Well, I think we're going to discover that tonight. And
right,
so it might be good that we haven't posted any episodes yet, so we can go ahead and fly the explicit tag for this one.
Fair enough. Just to bring up that first point, watching, you know, in reviewing episode 3 tonight, it reminded me of one of our favorite times of last season when we were watching.
And
I don't know if I want to bring up the RF term right away or if we're just going to let that come up naturally.
I think we should let it come up naturally.
That's what I'm thinking. So I'll let that go.
Okay.
But I definitely found a few of those moments in tonight's episode review.
Great.
So I'm excited.
Okay, so this episode is The Unquiet Dead, a nice little Charles Dickens adventure.
Very spooky episode.
In April. And just to start it off, that, you know, with this being such a spooky ghost zombie type episode, and it was first aired on April 9th, so that kind of threw me for a little while that this would be more of a Halloween type episode.
Well, this did come out around Easter, so, you know, the whole dead rising from the grave thing, that works, right?
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Baby zombie Jesus.
Exactly. So you get Christmas and Easter together, because the episode takes place at Christmas.
Yes.
But there's zombies coming from the grave, so that's more of an Easter type thing.
Yeah.
Okay. Correct. There's a whole lot of Christianity going on in there.
I don't think they have that on Gallifrey, thankfully. But we start out in what appears to be a funeral home, a funeral parlor.
Yeah.
And their son is grieving his dead mother.
Which I wanted to bring up. Did you realize this was the first episode that David Tennant was in as the grandson?
No.
No, I know, it's great. I was gonna lead into that point. You guys, like, got there before me. I was gonna say, please don't correct me when I'm wrong. However, but I wanted to see how many people would go back and watch the episode based solely on that.
If you
were really drunk and didn't really pay attention, it could happen. Not even joking. You're going to go back now and look again, and you'll see it. You'll be like, maybe, you know. If I was three sheets to the wind, that would be a David Tennant in all my books.
I mean, I was actually reaching for the mouse when you initially said that.
I
was going to the internet to go, no, I just watched this an hour ago. No.
Don't lie, you were about to flip the table right over.
Well, yeah.
This is a sham.
Outrage. Outrage!
Blasphemy. Gotta go with blasphemy, because it's the Christian episode.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
With the zombies.
The woman in the coffin, gets covered up in some kind of blue smoke gas.
Yeah, she's just kind of lying there, and it sucks into her face.
And she comes to life and chokes out her son. Or was it her grandson?
Grandson.
She's got that superhuman strength that zombies apparently have. They don't have speed as far as movement, but the strength is ungodly. If I remember correctly from any piece of furniture I've ever received from my grandparents, it's the sturdiest thing in the world I've ever seen. That coffin was just like one arm blew the side of that thing off. I'm honestly amazed. It didn't even faze me that she choked her grandson out that easily. I don't even know why the, you know, keeper there tried to save him. It seemed like a lost cause.
Well, I have heard of what they call grandpa strength, where, you know, you get these little wiry old men, or at least back home, you know, on the farms and stuff, and you'd have these 90-year-old guys that were picking up plow equipment that I could barely budge. So it makes sense that old people are just naturally stronger, and you add that to the zombie strength, it goes up like orders of magnitude.
Well, that's a good point, too.
So she gets up and, I guess, takes to the streets.
Yeah.
And
goes out for a nice little stroll in the snow.
Job's a job.
Yeah. The Undertaker gets a little upset. This seems to be a recurring thing.
Yeah. It's like, oh, the dead are walking again. Oh,
again. You know? Yes. So apparently he's not a very good Undertaker.
Yeah, maybe that's not embalming fluid that he's using. Maybe it's like zombie potion.
Well, my thinking, you know, there's the old thing of why doctors become coroners.
Because they're not very good doctors.
Well, no, because, you know, the worst that could happen is nothing. I mean, the patients are dead when they get there, so you don't, you know, I guess their bad day is when one comes back. And so this guy's like, having a lot of bad days.
It's like a weatherman.
You're saying, like, if Beverly Crusher was a coroner, she would actually be able to bring people back to life.
She's that bad, but she's also on another show.
Okay, sorry. So didn't mean to do the crossover there.
We'll leave the trick to the other show. Sneed, the Undertaker, and jumps in his carriage, the hearse.
Yes.
Horse-drawn hearse to take to the streets and find her.
To quote-unquote go grave or body snatching. I mean, at least they know what they're doing.
Yeah, but, I mean, does it count as body snatching if it's, you know, well, I guess a body's a body.
It does.
Yeah.
But, you know, she's up and, you know, the stiffs are walking.
They're ambitious, you know. You got to keep up that womanly old figure one way or another. If you're rotting, you might as well be exercising.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, she's one of these old people that you see at the mall. Well, you've got to make like five laps around the mall. Yeah, the power walking grandmas that you see at the mall. So she got that habit, and I guess she maintained it through this one. But he's pressuring Gwyneth, his servant girl, to...
use the sight.
Use the sight, or he's going to fire her.
Yeah.
And then she goes into some kind of trance-like thing.
Oh, she's lost. She doesn't know where she's going. Oh, she's surrounded. Blah, blah, blah.
So she's looking for... she can see the dead or something. She has some kind of second sight. Meanwhile, the Doctor and Rose are in the TARDIS trying to go to Naples in 1869.
Mm-hmm. Or 1860.
Yeah.
Christmas in 1860, Naples. And
whoops. They land in Cardiff instead.
Yeah. Rose is about to jump out and, you know, she's all excited to see 1860. Mm-hmm. Christmas Eve 1860, and she's about to run out, and the Doctor's concerned about how she's dressed.
And she's wearing, like, a tank top and a tracksuit or something.
Yeah. It's her standard English white trash attire.
Yeah.
I was actually going to say that, but I'm glad that you got it out.
Yeah. That was episode one, was England Has White Trash 2.
Yeah. And they did really well, you know?
Yeah.
And the only problem was the jeans didn't have the holes in these. Other than that, I think she had it pretty much nailed.
Yeah, that would have been a nice touch.
Is that a worldwide white trash thing, the holy jeans, or is that just an American, you know, variation?
It's hard to say. We couldn't see her front yard, and I couldn't tell if there was a Fiat up on cinder blocks or not.
Well, she lives in the projects.
That's true. So she doesn't have a front yard.
It's a little harder to...
It's true. She lives in one of those big apartment buildings. Let's see. Actually, no. recalling from other episodes, I do remember seeing cars in the alley like that.
Yeah.
Okay, so it's that kind of place.
They might have had, like, laundry drying over the balcony or something like that.
There you go. You just hang your babies out to dry.
Well, yeah, that's why you have those lines between... You can actually send them back and forth between apartments that way.
That is genius. Think about the gas savings you get from bringing your kids to daycare.
Just wheel them over on the
the
clothesline.
And then when you're working on the phone all day, you don't have to have the kids in the background screaming and then have to refund the money.
And it's fun. It's like a ride, you know?
But see, they can't see your smiles. You're going to have to start laughing more.
we have to laugh harder and faster. But in 1860, she goes to the costume room, changes into her appropriate clothing.
Yes.
Which, looks okay.
The doctor says she looks very beautiful, for a human.
See, doesn't he say, well, you know. And she says, you know what? And then he says, for a human? Because I was actually going to write this all down because I was going to say, when he says, you know, we all know it's actually the teeth. It has nothing to do with the human thing. But we also have to remember it is a British show, so.
Who notices teeth?
Right. She actually has kind of nice teeth.
Not on the bottom. The bottom ones are like, I mean, they're white, don't get me wrong. I don't see cabbage in there or anything, but it's like, now you're going to have to go look again. You're both giving this, like, deadpan stare.
We've been looking at Rose for a while, so maybe we've just gotten used to it at this point.
Yeah.
And that's very possible. We both watch, shows on the BBC all the time. It's just one of those things. They talk about us and cheeseburgers, so everybody's got to have something.
We're going to start asking our guest each week, do you like the BBC?
There's parts of it that I definitely do like. Doctor Who.
Okay.
I'm just waiting to watch your guys' responses. I also watch Top Gear quite a bit, but...
Okay.
I haven't watched a lot of the other shows, mostly due to my time schedules. It's ridiculous.
See, I pretty much love all of the BBC.
Yeah, here on this podcast, we love the BBC.
Well, there you go. I'm glad I'm a guest.
Yes.
Oh,
we'll have to text you later.
You just have to laugh. If we don't have video going up, they're not going to see you guys with these big smiles the whole time.
Right. I cut out the smiling pauses in post-production.
Oh, perfect. So it'll just be awkward. I'll be like that crazy guy that's laughing the whole time.
And right.
You guys will be the ones that are like, we are not inviting him back again.
No, we'll let the listeners decide on that. When they're like, hey, bring back the awkward laugh guy. He was funny. We enjoyed him.
He filled your podcast with 40 minutes of laughter, and it was a 45-minute bit.
We said one joke about Dickens, and then from that point on, it was just laughter.
That sounds like something that Jenny would laugh at more than me.
Definitely.
Yeah. So, does Charlie make cider?
Dickens cider?
So, yes. Anyway, though, the old lady apparently had bought tickets to see Charles Dickens. Because I guess in the world before internet and the world before television and the world before
books,
radios and phonographs, they had those book things. And apparently that wasn't enough, so they would have readings.
They would just go to watch the author read the book.
I gotta think, though, that's a good source of income for the author.
So it's kind of like 1869 Reading Rainbow.
But you don't have to take my word for it.
At the same time, when you go body snatching for that kind of thing, you've got Sneed and you've got Gwyneth going there. And it's like, why is Gwyneth even going? She's already seen the show. She's already seen the future
of right.
London. It's like when we talk about they don't have those entertainment things, you think she just sits at home all night and she watches the BBC?
Well, I think she can only read minds, though. So she hasn't been able to see the future yet.
Yeah, she would have to be with someone from the future to see the future.
Oh, that's right. I missed that part. I'll get caught up. That's okay. I'm in training still.
Yeah.
Let's go back. I'm sorry. I go on side tangents like you would not believe.
Oh, no, that's fine.
Let's go back outside the theater.
So we're in the theater, the old lady's in the audience, and Dickens is giving, you know, his recitation of A Christmas Carol. When the old lady starts ghosting out.
Right. Like, right when he's describing Marley's ghost, he looks out into the audience and hears this ghost woman. Ooh! Spirits come out of her face and start flying around the room.
And there's chaos.
Yes.
Now, the doctor walking down the street, though, is, you know, it's 1869 Cardiff, Christmas Eve. It's not Naples in 1860, so he's a little bummed that he's in the wrong place, wrong time. Yeah. As soon as he hears the screams of panic from the theater, he seems a little excited.
Yeah, his face lights up, and he's like, that's more like it. Let's go check this out.
So they run toward the theater. Meanwhile, everybody else is running out of the theater. When they get there, Charles Dickens doesn't seem too impressed with the doctor.
No.
Yeah, it's like, get off the stage, and thinks the doctor's actually, you know, causing this tomfoolery.
Yeah.
Or this, what was it he called? Tommy Rot.
Yes, yes. He thinks it's basically just a big illusion show that somebody's doing, so.
In the meantime, though,
Sneed and Gwyneth are capturing
You know, she's pretty much,
well, yeah, because the spirits have left her, so she's just a rotting corpse again.
Right.
They've grabbed her and drag her back out to the street.
Which is where Rose sees them tossing her in the hearse, and they're trying to come up with some excuse of, oh, she's just had a fever, she's sick, we're going to go take care of her, we're fine, don't pay attention to the fact that we're putting her in a hearse.
So then the creepy old man chloroforms her, throws her in the hearse, and apparently fills her up, too.
Yeah, we find out later, fills up as she's being chloroformed.
It is Rose, though, that's kind of, like, her thing.
Right, that's why she's there, is to be felt up.
Yeah.
Yeah, you know, each of the doctor's travel companions has, like, their thing. I'd easily put Rose into the category of roofied white girl.
This may not be the first time she's been chloroformed, you're saying? Or
that's exactly what I'm saying. It's probably preferred. She's like, you know, I'd like to ride in a hearse. I just don't want to be conscious for it.
Right. She actually has that t-shirt, I think. So now they've got the old lady and they've stuffed Rose in the hearse with her and drive off as the doctor and Dickens come running out. The doctor jumps in a carriage. You know, the whole follow that carriage routine. And Dickens is a little upset by it because apparently this is his carriage.
Right. So they get in, they go off together, and, you know, they're kind of having a little chat, and that's when Doctor realizes that this is Charles Dickens. Oh, I'm your number one fan. This is great.
I enjoyed that for a bit, that, you know, the Doctor met somebody that he was a fan of.
Right. And he didn't, like, take Charles Dickens and put him into a bed and tie him up and make him write a new story for him like that happened.
I'm your number one
fan. Stephen King
story. Yeah. This was not misery.
Make some fish fingers and custard. Stick around. It's going to be a great time.
I want you to rewrite the end of the last story. He's not supposed to die. They get to the the funeral parlor. I keep on saying mortuary, but I don't think it really fits that.
Yeah. It kind of is. They have a morgue. That's,
This is, you know, 1869... you know, technology, so it was just like, he's the guy in town that took care of the dead bodies type thing.
Yeah.
I don't really think they had too many licensing issues back then.
Probably not.
Probably not.
What do we do with this dead body? Let's give it to that creepy old guy in the haunted house. Yeah, he'll take him. That's what he does.
Well, when Sneed gets there, though, he puts Rose in the same room as the two dead bodies.
Yeah, which is, what the hell is he doing that for?
Well, And my thinking is, he's hoping that the, you know, if they do come back,
they're going to take care of her.
They'll take care of that problem, so, one less witness. And he didn't technically kill her.
Yeah.
There's an off chance maybe she dies, maybe she doesn't die. But as expected, they, you know, get repossessed now with the blue gas, come back to life, and start chasing Rose around the room.
And they're just like classic zombies at this point.
Your
eyes and
Michael Jackson video type, or I don't think they were very choreographed. So
no, they weren't.
Okay.
They didn't do any stylish dancing.
No.
Unfortunately.
Which is funny with this whole thing that was going on with all the screaming and, you know, potential death that's about to happen. When we go back over this, you're going to hear a lot of screaming in the background on my microphone.
Well, that's good.
That, yeah.
You know, it adds
it's
to
production
the...
production value.
Yeah, for free. We didn't even have to, like, pay for sound effects, so that's
right.
Awesome.
Well, you guys don't. I'll have to pay for this afterwards, I'm sure of it.
And keep paying.
Not my problem.
So the doctor and Charles
definitely
Dickens gets
hear a
there.
Kid screaming.
I love children.
But there's no torture involved, I assure you.
No children were harmed in the recording of this podcast.
This is correct.
Yet.
Yeah, they're better. We'll let them know if we do. We can always edit that part out.
it never happened. There's no proof. It's like Nixon's 18 minutes of missing tape.
That's the best part. There wouldn't be any tape if the silence hadn't been around.
Oh, see, we don't know about that
the
yet.
The doctor
though.
Told. Oh, that's right.
Yeah.
Well, spoilers. You know, how do they know we're not Time Lords?
Well, exactly, because we are skipping around the time stream quite a bit. We, watching these episodes
all around,
wibbly wobbly.
Yeah.
Jiggery pokery.
Jiggery pokery was the first episode, yes.
Yeah.
And I don't know how that didn't become a thing, because timey wimey, wibbly wobbly became a thing pretty quick.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess Matt Smith has had something, surely, but jiggery pokery didn't.
Just once.
It was once, and nobody really quoted it.
Anything, everybody will try something once, but after you do the pokey and they didn't like it.
The jiggery was fine. Jiggery is fine. Pokery, not into the pokery.
Okay.
Just the jiggery.
Maybe it's just that Rose didn't like the pokery.
Yeah, see, that's what I'm getting at. It's like you get another doctor, you can always try the pokery again. If it's a different travel companion, too. There's lots of combinations.
Yeah.
Right.
Eventually, it might just work out.
Like, you could try some wibbly pokery.
Some wibbly wobbly.
No, wobbly pokery.
Yeah.
Yeah. You gotta sneak the pokery up on. It's not something you just, like, ask for out front.
Well, that's why the TARDIS is so hard to drive. Like, if you notice in the beginning of this one, they're both laying on the ground. That's not by accident.
Uh-oh. It's like when you take the curve.
Turn this knob. Grab this stick. You know, anything could happen when you're driving the TARDIS.
Exactly.
This is true.
It's like when you're driving on a curvy road and you're trying to get the girl a little bit closer and you take the curve a little too fast and let Mr. Newton help slide her over toward you.
When was the last time you drove a car with bench sheets in the front?
1992, and it was a
and it was a
63. Was it a Dodge? I'm trying to, but anyway, no, we're way off on that.
We're
one.
We're getting way off topic.
When's the last time you drove?
Not have bench seats. Actually, that's not true. Probably did. Not that it matters. We'll continue.
No. So the doctor, they get to the funeral parlor. The doctor breaks in.
Yeah, and he sees, like, the lights are kind of flickering in there.
Right. They're gas lamps.
Yeah. And this is important because when he was in the theater, he noticed that the spirits that had left the dead woman, you know, they kind of floated through the air and went into the gas lamps.
Okay.
And so now he's really starting to suspect something's going on with the gas. You know, so he goes up and he investigates. Oh, I hear a noise in the wall.
So he's hearing something, but then he hears Rose screaming. So when the doctor hears Rose screaming, though, he was a little different than the doctors I've seen in the past because he runs down the hall and kicks in the door.
Mm-hmm.
And I haven't seen a doctor be that active or, I don't want to say violent, but macho.
Kind of action star-ish. Where, you know, the others might have just...
That's how I felt he was throughout this whole series. That's what I loved about him.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's Christopher Eccleston was a little bit more...
He could lose his temper in 2 seconds. He'd be like this... totally jolly guy, and then he's like, no. And just, like, stops everything
right.
And pisses everybody off.
And that's the thing about Christopher Eccleston, is that he would go from just smiling and happy and bouncy to completely serious, like that, you know, in a heartbeat. And I
heartbeats.
Think, yeah, 2 heartbeats. And I think this episode is where you first start to see him come into his personality, like, as the Doctor. you know, like his version of the Doctor. Right. With the first two, he's kind of, it almost seems like he's getting a feel for the character a little bit and trying to make it his own. So
now we know who this Doctor is.
Right.
He's a man of action.
Right.
Okay.
They always say your first Doctor's your only Doctor, and I have to say that he's definitely my favorite. Just throwing that out there, so if anybody's listening that you might care about what I say, which they don't, just now they have to know it.
Well, I think that's important.
Yeah, everybody remembers your first.
Unless it was a drunk pokey.
The pokery, yeah.
No, I remember that.
The drunk pokery?
Yeah.
Okay.
But
so anyway.
So yeah, they've saved Rose, and the Undertaker, they start to question him now, and you know, Dickens is pretty mad. You know, it scared the Dickens out of him so far, so he's upset.
Mm-hmm. Oh!
See, I thought I could slip that by. Jenny didn't react.
Yeah, I didn't. I wasn't.
She doesn't laugh at my jokes anymore. That's why we have to have guests on, so I can make bad puns.
Just make the same ones every time.
I think I'm going to do a pun for the title of this episode.
Okay.
The Dickens scared out of us, or something. I don't know. We'll figure it out. The Doctor's Dickens. But anyway,
Dickens.
Can't get his Dickens up.
I'm going to have to cut this episode. Oh my God. So anyway, it's like, is there something above explicit tag for you two?
No.
Not rated.
The special director's cut, unrated, next week on iTunes.
Just don't listen to this.
You just pay per listen.
I'm going to have to get somebody to record a thing, you know, sound drop at the beginning. Warning, this episode may contain material and subject matter not suitable for young listeners.
Or anyone.
Viewer discretion or listener discretion is advised.
No, you just said it. Just put it at the beginning there.
Yeah. But they're pretty much interrogating the Undertaker, who's, you know, finally come clean. You know, hey, the stiffs have been getting up.
Mm-hmm.
Walking out. This place
for
is all.
A few months now, right?
Yeah, a few months. Even though he'd heard rumors about this house for years.
Yeah. And the reputation of being haunted and whatever, but he's like, I'm an Undertaker.
It's called cheap real estate, is what it's called.
Yeah.
I mean, really.
He did mention he got the house for cheap, and that would, you know, stand to reason that, you know, well, if it's haunted. But the Doctor explains that where there's, like, weak areas.
Mm-hmm. There's like a rift in time and space.
Yeah, where the barrier between time and space are kind of weak, you get some of that bleed over, and that's where most of your hauntings and ideas of hauntings historically have mm-hmm. come from. We hear stuff from the other side. But they're talking, and I guess Rose goes to help Gwyneth,
mm-hmm.
you know, with her chores or whatever, and just get to know her and talk to her.
Yeah.
And she, you know, Gwyneth is like freaking out that, you know, somebody of Rose's standing would be helping her.
Yeah, don't help me, you can't do this.
Like, she's too high class to help fold the towels or whatever.
Yeah. But they have a nice little chat, and they kind of discover that they're a little bit more, you know, have things more in common than they originally thought.
Right.
Know?
Yeah, if they were college roommates.
They could have been. They would have, I think they would have gotten along if they'd come from the same time.
I think so.
But while she's folding her laundry, though, she kind of gets one of her little sixth sense reads off of mm-hmm. Rose and can see the future or see, you know, the London that Rose knows.
Right. She starts seeing all the people rushing by, the metal boxes and the metal birds with people inside of them flying around.
Yeah. So, you know, it's your standard, ooh, the future is a scary, strange place and my little 1869 mind can't process it. Ooh.
Mm-hmm.
Let me talk about the differences in ways that I would talk about it in 1869.
Mm-hmm.
And oh my God, all the half-naked people in London.
For shame.
Oh my goodness. And the big bad wolf.
Oh yeah.
And
yes.
This is one of the first explicit mentions
mm-hmm.
of the big bad wolf.
I think it's actually the first one.
No, they mentioned the
bad
wolf contingency or something. Or the bad wolf scenario.
Yes, in the end of the world.
Moz and the face of Bo are talking.
Mm-hmm.
But it's just a real quick little line. This one, she's really loud about it.
Mm-hmm.
And that's going to be a big deal as the season goes on.
So keep an eye out for the bad wolf.
The bad wolf.
So apparently her sixth sense is getting stronger all the time.
Right.
And that's when the doctor comes in and, you know, he says, well, you know, I guess the rift is opening. You know, it's, I guess this spot in between space-time is getting weaker.
Right.
So they kind of decide to have a seance and call up some of these gas spirits.
Dickens isn't too happy about that.
No.
He, again, Tommy Rott.
Yeah.
And his parents wouldn't let him on a Ouija board when he was younger, so he kind of had to go the other route and look for all the truths in the world, and that's why he was really upset by this.
Yes.
You know, when you devote your life to finding the truth in science in the world, and then you have a seance, it's just...
You know, I would think he would want to go ahead and have the seance just so he could use it as a way to say, hey, see, this... It is Tommy Rott.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I'm going to try to, you know, that's the word Dickens used was Tommy Rott, and since we have Tommy on this week, that's what I wanted to use that word as much as
totally appropriate.
Yeah.
Yes.
But, I mean, if you wear gym shorts too many weeks in a row, do you get Tommy Rott?
That's a good question. You would be implying that I'm an athletic type.
All the gym time that, I mean,
yes,
you and I both.
All the gym time. Yes. Clearly, you could see how fast I could run when I was at a particular intervention.
Yeah. So they they have their seance. Gwyneth does her thing.
Her magical.
Ooh, I'm a medium. And we see the gas ghosts.
It's a lot like the scene in Ghost, where Whoopi Goldberg summons all the ghosts up.
Just far less dreadlocks.
Yeah. There's also the special effects are pretty good.
Yeah.
Not too bad.
So these blue ghosts show up, you know, out of the gas, and they identify themselves as the Gilth.
Yeah.
And their world was destroyed in the Time War.
Now, Gilth, is that G-I-L-F? As in ghosts I'd like to...
No.
No? No. Okay. I didn't read the cliff notes on this one.
No, this is the Gilth, G-E-L-T-H. Yeah.
And but, not like the in the Dark Crystal, the Gelflings, right?
No.
Yeah.
No.
Okay.
So, but the, I don't know though, the one ghost had it going on, so.
Yes.
I can see where that mistake would have been made, Tommy.
Wow. Yeah.
But that's, I think that should be a different podcast. And we could just do a historical thing, drive around the country to haunted houses looking for Gilfs.
Right. That could be a okay. Whole new market. I mean, anybody... No, let me rephrase that. Somebody will pay for anything.
I think you could do a whole website of this. Just
that's
videos.
What I'm saying. We could do a Gilf website.
We'll talk after the show and see about monetizing that portion.
Yeah. That's going to happen. Gilftube.com.
But... Oh, my God.
All right, so back to the sexy ghosts.
But, so we meet the Gelf, and apparently their world was destroyed in the Time War. And when they mention the Time War, the Doctor visibly reacts to that. He's, oh.
I didn't do it.
You know, sorry about that, guys. They go on and say that, you know, they're looking for a new place, and mm-hmm. that they can inhabit the bodies.
That's
of,
the word we were looking for. It's inhabit.
They can move in to the dead bodies. And use them.
Right.
And Rose seems a little upset about that.
Yeah, she's just kind of like, oh, you can't disrespect the dead bodies like that. And the doctor's like, well, do you have a donor card? You know, you're going to be donating your dead parts when you're gone. You're going to be helping to save their lives just like, you know, if you were helping somebody with a kidney or something.
Right. Recycling. It's acting green. When did the series originally air? This was in
2005.
Is that what it was? Yeah. Okay. So 2005 was a little bit before the green movement, but it's kind of getting there. So if anything, the Doctor's always been a trendsetter. You've got, you know, a fez and a bow tie. You've got long brown jackets. Why can't you go green with recycling bodies?
Yeah.
Right. I mean... Well, 2005, it would have been pretty much on the upswing of recycling.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So it's good that he would be one of the first shows that really made a bit. So this is the recycling episode of Doctor
yes.
Who.
The recycling Easter Christmas episode. You get a little bit of everything.
see, if this was an American program, at the end of it, they would have the doctor do one of those little, the more you know things. Mm-hmm. You know, where it's like, did you know the human body can be reused by alien races in need of a planet?
Only if they're in gaseous form.
if you have a gassy old grandma, maybe she can be recycled to help the Gelf. And then, do-do-do-do, the more you know.
Yes. educational.
After the seance is over, they've decided now to go ahead with the, I guess, using the dead bodies, bring the Gelf over.
Mm-hmm. And they have to send Gwyneth down to the basement where the weakest, or to the morgue, where
right.
where the rift is the weakest.
Right.
She can make a bridge and let all these gas spirit
the Gelf come over.
Yes.
Because they're trapped kind of in between, I guess. And since she has the sight, they can let her act as a bridge.
Yes.
So they get down there. She goes to the archway, which is the weakest point.
Mm-hmm.
And all the gas ghosts start coming out. And it quickly turns into Indiana Jones and the, you know, Raiders of the Lost Ark.
Yes.
Where the ghosts are woo around the room. The gateway ghost turns all red and fiery.
Which was a good touch. I mean, if you're going to go from good to evil, like, flame is the way I would go.
Well, I mean, yeah, that's always the, you know, the fire, darker and fiery.
I mean, obviously it wasn't fire, but it looked like fire. And I think that was the key point, because, I mean, obviously with the moments to come up, if it was fire, it would have been a different outcome.
So as Gwyneth is helping the souls through, mm-hmm. we've gone evil, and...
Yeah. And they're not just taking dead bodies now, they're taking anyone they can get their hands on, and they start with Old Man Sneed.
Old Man Sneed, the mortician slash
yes.
undertaker.
See, this is where the Dickens joke comes in. Because, you know, if they're just going to take anybody, they're going to take Dickens.
They'll go for Dickens. Right? No. I mean, they go for the Dickens. Oh, my God.
I'm surprised Rose didn't go for the Dickens. I thought she loved Dickens.
Just the cider.
Oh, the Dickens cider. That's right.
But anyway, as the morgue is now full of the undead, possessed, you know, Gelf crossovers... The doctor and Rose locked themselves up in the, I guess, corner lock room.
Yeah, I didn't really get what that was. They kind of, like, backed into this corner, and there's a barred gate in front of them. I don't know what the hell this gate is.
Maybe he had... This has been going on for a few months, so maybe the Mr. Sneed had put in, I don't know, a storage room with a locking door so he could, like, lock the dead in.
A catacombs kind of thing.
Possibly, yeah, how they used to do that under Rome and everything.
Yeah.
That makes sense.
Yeah.
But now they have...
Dickens has taken the chance to escape.
Oh, yeah.
He's like, I'm getting the fuck out of here.
Dickens is gone.
Peace out!
It's like, I didn't sign up for this, and I didn't write any kind of book about this, so I'm gone.
You know, he dies next year, so why run?
Well, he doesn't know this yet.
Well, that's true, but...
You know, he's, you know, I know... tired and with his book tour and everything, but he doesn't know he's dying next year.
Mm-hmm.
That's, you know, going to be a surprise ending for him.
Yeah, but if you base everything on the silk robe that he was wearing in the opening scene, you should know he was going to die next year.
What?
So, Rose is upset as they're locked in the little storage lock box area catacombs thing that she knows this didn't happen. So what the heck's going on? There weren't zombies bopping around in 1869. She stayed in school long enough to get to that part of history, apparently.
Number one, I don't believe that she paid attention at school.
Could have happened and she missed it.
Yeah.
I think she's one of the ones that hung out with the teacher more than anybody.
I don't know. But then you could have the doctor, I mean, explaining that time is...
It's always being rewritten. It's
right.
always in flux.
In flux.
Anything could happen and change the course of history.
But
she would have known if she'd watched any movie about time traveling whatsoever.
But she wasn't a sci-fi nerd. We haven't really established that she...
Everybody's seen Back to the Future. You don't have to be a sci-fi nerd.
She wasn't born until 87.
So
she's completely missed.
No excuse.
Anyway. And time travel in Back to the Future is different than time travel in the Who universe.
No, but he did rewrite history.
Several times.
Yeah.
But then, as they are trapped in there and going to meet their death, and he's upset that he's going to die in a basement in Cardiff.
Yeah, because after all the things he's seen.
Yeah, he saw the fall of Troy. He saw World War V.
Pushed boxes off at Boston Tea Party.
But he's going to die in
who
a
didn't?
Cardiff. But, yeah, you know, it's standard stuff. But then, as Dickens is running down the streets, he sees the gas lamps, and he puts, you know, he finally starts getting this all together. Ah, they're, you know, they're gas, whatever. Runs back to the house and starts breaking all of the gas, or putting out the gas lamps.
Basically filling the house.
He's turning
with
them
gas.
Up is what he was doing. He wasn't turning them off. He was turning them up so it started pumping the gas out more.
Right. He put out the flame and then turned them up.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then he ate a giant can of refried beans.
No, that was one of the cutscenes.
Oh, okay.
But he gets downstairs, explains what he's doing to the doctor, and apparently by filling the house full of gas, it's going to pull these ghosts out into the gas. And when that happens, they're able to make a run for it.
Right.
And as they are running out, though, Gwyneth is still stuck as the doorway. And they're like, well, you know, let her pull them back to the other side. But she can't.
She can't. They're stuck.
She's like a one-way street.
All she can do is hold them in there at that point.
Right. And she's got a box of matches in her pocket. And so Rose doesn't want Gwyneth to die. She's made friends with her little servant girlfriend. And the doctor says, oh, I won't let anything happen to her. You know, Dickens, get her out of here. So they get out. But then the doctor realizes that Gwyneth is dead, and probably has been dead for a minute.
Yeah.
So
like pretty much ever since she walked in there, she's
which kind of sucks, because it's like, that happens on a lot of Doctor Who's acquaintances. They die, and then they keep doing stuff.
With the doctor and in the basement with Gwyneth, he's realized she's dead. She has a box of matches that she shows him, so the doctor makes a run for it, too.
Mm-hmm.
She strikes a match, the whole place explodes. And this is one of those scenes.
Very action movie scene.
Well, yeah, there's always the scene where the hero runs away from the exploding something.
And dives just in the nick of time to roll out of the way and not catch on fire and be destroyed.
And we did that.
Yeah.
That's why he wore a leather coat.
And the leather coat does help.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Fire retardancy. You know, his fire retarded coat.
And plus it looks cool.
He does look cool in the leather jacket.
Mm-hmm.
I don't care too much for the jumper, but the leather jacket is cool. You know, and you can pretty much wear that anywhere.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
He's got the dark trousers, the leather jacket. He can show up anywhere. He'll look a little out of place, but he's not going to get shot.
Yeah.
But now, I guess, after this little adventure, though, Dickens is excited about life again.
He's got new inspiration.
New inspiration.
Books.
He's going to write about blue elementals to... You know, he's going to start it off in The Mystery of Edwin Drood, which he never has a chance to finish.
Right, because he does die the next year.
Yeah, in 1870 he dies. But we don't know this is, you know, I guess Rose missed that part of history because when she starts asking the doctor, oh, is this going to alter time? No, he dies next year.
Yeah.
Everything ends.
You know, that was something else that I think we kind of skipped over that really annoyed me about Rose in this episode. Where she says, I can't die in 1869. I haven't even been born yet.
Oh, yeah. But, okay, well, that's just the common person's, you know, misunderstanding of how time travel works. And the doctor does explain that, you know, you can be born in the 21st century and die in the 18th. That's, you know.
Right.
But she, well, I think that was more for us, for the people who are new to Doctor Who.
I would hope not, though, because it's like, you would assume that everybody would think that on their life scale, their life runs in a linear pattern, whereas where you are in time could be anywhere.
Maybe.
Yeah, sure.
Okay. So now they're off back into the TARDIS, taking off through time and space, leaving Dickens behind with his new inspiration. Running down the streets all excited, wishing everyone Merry Christmas and God bless us everyone.
Happy, happy, happy.
Yay! And God bless us everyone.
That's this tiny Tim moment. Especially when you just get done doing, you know, the Christmas Carol.
Which he... Nice little Christmas Carol wrap-up, yeah?
Yeah.
Yeah.
But So, what do you think of the episode? Let Tommy, our first guest, go first.
I actually like the episode quite a bit. There's maybe one or two episodes total out of any of the Doctor Who series that I didn't enjoy. The stories are very rich in the first season, especially. The characters...
Well, I was on my way to this gay gypsy bar mitzvah for the disabled when I suddenly thought, gosh, the Third Reich's a bit rubbish. I think I'll kill the Führer.
And what did you think about it, Ginny?
I think it was just an okay episode. It wasn't a standout one to me. It was fun, but it wasn't one of my favorites by far.
At this point in the series, because this was the third episode.
Yeah.
And so this is the third episode of the new series. I actually enjoyed it.
Mm-hmm. See, I'm on the same
page. Like I said, it was a lot of fun, and I think, I don't know, I had this weird thing where I kept thinking that Tom Hanks, a little older, could have played this part if he was English. I kept seeing that through the whole thing, that he had a very Tom Hanks-ish look.
Mm-hmm.
I could
see that.
I don't know, maybe for Dickens.
Oh, okay.
Dickens could have been Tom Hanks, or Tom Hanks could have been like an older Tom Hanks playing this part.
Mm-hmm.
If he were English. And so maybe that's what, because I'm a big Tom Hanks fan, so maybe I, okay, was like, okay, so I had that Tom Hanks vibe and felt good about it. But I don't know, it was, for me, it was an exciting thing.
Type vibe, or even like, never mind. I need to get better at the celebrity thing, because I don't have celebrity names down, so when I start going to them, it's gone.
Okay. I guess that does it for this episode.
Yeah.
We'd like to thank Tommy for joining us tonight on our third podcast as our first guest.
Yay. I'm glad to be here. Hopefully next time we'll have a few less technical errors so that we can actually communicate a bit better. I think that's mostly my fault.
Where can we find you online, Tommy? Do you have anything? Go ahead and plug yourself if you want to.
I'll pass for now. I'll let you guys have this one, and then next time I'm on, I'll do a plug, because right now I don't have much going on for me.
Okay.
Okay.
And you can find us, of course, online at playingdoctorpodcast.com, or...
on Twitter at playingdoctors.
Yeah, with the S, because somebody else took the other one for some reason. And
somebody who's probably actually playing doctor.
We're on the Facebooks, and we're on the... And we've got the Twitters and the Google Pluses, so we're all up in the social medias.
MySpace next. We'll get a MySpace page.
We do have to get a MySpace page. And we'd also, once again, like to send out special thanks to...
Lewis at Flying Monkey Moto Gear for the fabulous theme song that he wrote for us. Well, he didn't write it, but...
He remixed it for us. So thanks for joining us, and I guess we'll see you next week, everyone.
Thank you.